UCR Podcast.
We said goodbye to Garth Hudson this week. Garth, the last living member of the band, passed away at the age of 87. Even if you don't know the name, chances are really good that if you are of a certain age and era, you will recognize Garth. He was in a unique category of folks, someone who was absolutely captivating to watch as he engaged in his craft. He was someone who just loved what he did, and you could see that in the way that he played music, but he was also very much his own person. We've heard the saying about somebody that marches to the beat of their own drum, and that is certainly one way that you can describe Garth Hudson. Perhaps swap out that drum for a keyboard or an accordion. Warren Haynes of the Allman Brothers Band and Government Mule wrote a long remembrance of Garth on social media and said, quote, "The last piece of the puzzle is gone. The last remaining member of everyone's favorite band is passed. A key ingredient in a lost recipe where every ingredient was key. What Garth brought to the band's music was uniqueness and authenticity and a deep history of musical knowledge that made those songs sound like they could have been written in previous eras. Garth himself was not only from a previous era, he may have been from another planet." That is the end of the quote from Warren Haynes. Now, it's Matt Wardlaw, and UCR's Nick DiRiso is here with me. Nick, I do like that part of Warren's description of Garth Hudson as the last remaining member of everyone's favorite band, but he also talked about that uniqueness and especially Garth's authenticity, how he brought that deep history of musical knowledge that made those songs sound like they could have been written in a previous time. And I know for myself personally, I have always been fascinated by guys like Garth, who, as I said, somebody that had a captivating presence. And I think you hit a point as a music fan where you start to see guys like Garth and it connects as soon as you're watching them play. This is the guy who helped them find that sound. This is the guy who helped them know where to find that sound. And I think the band were fortunate in the sense that you can make the argument that they had several musical tour guides like that in their midst. But Garth is one of those guys, right, that as a fan, you'd look at this guy and think to yourself, as long as they have him in the lineup, there's nowhere they can't go.
Yes, well, he was classically trained. I grew up in a musical family. And so what he brought to their music, first backing up Bob Dylan and then on their own as the band, was this great wealth of musical knowledge. When they would get stuck writing a song, he could guide them out of that. He was very fearful, though, that his parents were not going to be on board with him joining a rock band. They had put a lot of time and effort and money into his training, and he wasn't sure quite how to explain to them that he was going to go out on the road. So he lied. He told his parents that he was going to be giving them music lessons, and so he asked each member of the band to give him $10. And that way he could show that he was actually tutoring them. And that's how he managed to sneak out the back door and into the band. Just has a boundless curiosity, though. He never really stopped learning. You know, he never stopped being interested in music and the things that make music. There are these wonderful stories about Hudson going into music stores when the band is out on the road, picking out new instruments to take home and master them. You know, while his buddies are out drinking and chasing women, you know, he's back at the hotel with some strange, you know, new experience happening. He had a deep grasp of history, too, you know, brought new elements to their work. Of course, their sound was always based on rootsy influences, folk, rockabilly, country. But, you know, Garth was over there listening to old hymns, polka music, Bach, jazz. And in that knowledge, you know, in that ability to understand the greater spectrum of music, kind of helped them along the way. You know, in so many instances, he was a glue guy is the best way to describe him.
And he's a guy that, like certain musicians do, thought a lot about choices that he made or didn't make. Like, I like that one of the conversations that you had with Garth that he talked about specifically, and you wrote about this on your Substack, but he talked about specifically how there's all these guys that might have used a Hammond. He didn't use a Hammond for that particular purpose on that particular day, and here's why. You know, like, so I love that, like, he was thinking about, like, the overall science of... He was always a guy in my view, that was doing things differently than his peers. And he could tell you very specifically, it seems like, why he was making those choices.
Well, it's funny. You kind of get the sense on stage that he was something of a nutty professor, you know, when you watch him play, because he's got this banks of keyboards, and he often was just kind of dwarfed by the machines around him. But that's not really what was revealed in conversation. As you say, there was very specific reasons for what he did. He always had a very personal approach to music, whether that was in selecting an accompanying instrument or deciding what and when to play. Every side road in our talks always led back to the main path. You know, he was not prone to talking in a straight line. But at the same time, he would not become distracted. It wasn't like you had a moment in time where he didn't bring it all back around to what you were originally talking about. He just had so much information, so much history in his mind that he was constantly bringing in pieces from here and there, you know. To quote his former bandmate Bob Dylan, Garth Hudson contained multitudes.
Yeah, I respect that. Like, I think that you and I have both talked to folks like that, that like there's a certain art to the person that can't really boil it down. But at the same time, like, even though he's not like your type of person to boil it down to the simple point, he does ultimately answer the question. And that's very respectable, because there's plenty of other folks that just will go on and on and on and ultimately will dodge your question. And like, you know, you read interviews with Garth and he really wasn't one of those people.
Well, and his a good example of the way that Garth was such a benefit to them was really at the beginning of their work together as the band, as they were emerging from a period that was recorded and released as the Basement Tapes, they spent hours, days, weeks living together and recording together in the basement of a house that they dubbed Big Pink because it was painted pink, right? Not only did he bring all the instruments in, make sure they were all functioning, set up all the microphones, oversee the recording of it. He also curated it. He kept all of those tapes. They were all numbered. They were all titled. And decades later, when it came time for the record label to do one of these big box sets, that took a look back at that era, they turned to Garth, and you know, Garth Hudson said, "Oh well, I've got him," and he brought all of his tapes, and they went through it, and it was all still there, just you know, carefully cataloged and preserved for decades, and that's why we have such a great accounting now of this really important era where both the band and a new direction for Bob Dylan was born in Big Pink.
I don't know that we're necessarily going to see that as much going forward, but in that time, like the 60s, 70s, into the 80s and beyond, it always seems like there was somebody in the group that was that kind of guy. You've spent a lot of time, you know, in recent times, especially as you've been working on your, you know, book about Bob Dylan and the band, you know, thinking about the band and Garth Hudson, but do you have a sense of why it was that Garth was one of those guys that would just hold on to everything like that?
Well, he was something of a historian, you know, as a person. You know, he thought and deeply about the past and you know, as it pertains to music. And so it's not surprising to me. I think he got a sense as it was happening that this was important. And at some point, maybe want to look back as he looked back at old hymns, you know, Anglican music, polka, jazz, you know, and this would be that kind of music, the kind of music that somebody would want to really get a fuller appreciation for and really dig into and explore. And he was right that the Basement Tapes box set is one of the gems in that long series of Bob Dylan box sets that have been coming out over the last years.
You're just so thankful that like somebody like a Garth Hudson exists in this case in the midst of the band, because it's like you and I have seen so many other cases where it's just like people don't preserve. And a lot of times the common line that is, you know, told to somebody like us when we're talking to the person is that like, you know, we were just doing the work. You know, we weren't thinking about, you know, cataloging and saving, you know, so it's just like, so it is a real gift. You know, I think that there's, we could cite other examples, but it's like, there's a gift to having somebody like a Garth Hudson in your midst that appreciates, is able to appreciate perhaps the gravity of what's happening in that moment as it's happening, because that's just so uncommon.
Well, and if you go back and listen to the band themselves, you know, they were constantly spinning off new ideas that moved into the culture and were oftentimes made much more famous by other people. You know, certainly to start with, you know, the Basement Tapes era with Bob Dylan is the birth of Americana, you know, which, mm-hmm. which is still flourishing today, despite the fact that that was, you know, decades ago. You know, far more people have heard acts that were influenced by the band than have heard the band, as important and popular as they are. There were smaller things too, though. Hudson ran a clavinet through a wah-wah pedal to complete Up on Cripple Creek. That was in 1969 when that song came out. Anyone who heard Superstition in 1972 could tell you that Stevie Wonder was listening. You know, they had a way of being predictive that would be surprising if you were in that moment. In the summer of 1967, when they were helping give birth to Americana, of course, it was the summer of love. You know, it was psychedelia. It was acid rock, you know, Sgt. Pepper's. And these guys are playing mandolins and accordions, you know.
Yeah, I mean, that's always been like a real joy as a music fan, is having like bands like that are like, you know, just a band out of time, as they say.
Yeah, and that's, you know, that's kind of the premise for the book that I've been working on, is, you know, is how these very these quiet people, they're just kind of tucked away in a house in near Woodstock, New York, created a sound that transcended in a way that the popular music of that era, that summer, really hasn't. You know, you don't really walk by a local music venue or hear someone drive by with the windows rolled down in their car listening to psychedelic rock, you know. But you do hear people playing roots rock and folk rock in Americana, you know. College towns are dominated now by young people whose parents were in many cases too young to remember when the Basement Tapes came out, playing the kind of music that Bob Dylan, Garth Hudson, and the band were working out in the basement in West Socrates, New York, all those years ago.
How did you find your way to the music of the band?
It's interesting. For me, and this is going to sound absolutely ridiculous, but Garth Hudson was on a record from a band called The Call, which was in heavy rotation on MTV for a couple of months. And he was just this explosion of Garth Hudson on this song called When the Walls Came Down. And I couldn't get over that sound. I did not come from a musical background that would have included something like Bob Dylan and the band. You know, they were, I might have heard that on the radio, but, you know, it wasn't a part of my musical upbringing. And so I actually came to them very late. I looked up who that was and saw that it was Garth Hudson, and just traced my way back to all of this wondrous music that I had just never come across before. You know, it was harder back then. You know, you didn't have streaming services where you could just pull things up. So it was a long journey. You know, I found their second record first, you know, then heard, I think that the, you know, Northern Lights, Southern Cross was the second one I heard. You know, it wasn't even in order. It was very much a journey, you know, of an exploration. And, I was just enchanted by it. You know, it got me deeper into Bob Dylan. You know, I'd heard, you know, his music but in many cases didn't know that they were playing on it. You know, knowledge was harder to get, you know, about who played on what. And so it took me a few years to kind of sort through all of it. But yeah, the funniest thing about this is how I came to it, which was an MTV song.
I kind of love that though, because it's like, that's the classic like liner note gateway that, especially in that era, led a lot of folks to somebody like to a unit like the Band, to a group like Little Feat. Like sometimes you were finding these people out of context because of the records that they were playing on, either during or long after they had done whatever they had done with their main project that they were known for by a whole other audience. And, you know, in your remembrance that you wrote for Ultimate Classic Rock, like, as I told you, as we were getting ready to do this, like, I completely forgotten that Rick and Levon and Garth are there as part of that all-star recreation of The Wall with Roger Waters in Berlin. Like, so it's just like, there's some people that maybe that was where they heard Garth for the first time, was playing on some tracks from that. And like, I think that's kind of the great thing about being a music fan, is just kind of these, sometimes the back door that leads you in to just ultimately a treasure trove like the Band. And as you say, the Band was like just the first room of the house that like then led you to getting deeper into Bob Dylan. So to me, I mean, that's just a great example of just like, you know, what makes, you know, following kind of the musical trail for any of this stuff so much fun.
Well, and there was a luck of time too for me. I spent a few years getting into this music, in some cases very deep into it. And then all of a sudden, Robbie Robertson put out his first solo record. And then a few years later, the Band returned as a recording unit, put out a trio of records. They were touring again. And it just, that a lot of things came together all at once, you know, just as I was probably at my, you know, at my limit of new things to discover about them, they became active again, both together as the Band, and then Robbie on his, you know, Robbie of course had several members of the Band on his solo records from that era. And it was just a really wonderful time to be a new fan of the Band, you know?
For sure. And I was going to ask about that, like timeline wise, like the Band, they're kind of playing shows for a little bit before they get an actual record together and out into the stores, when they kind of, you know, regrouped during that period that you were talking about. So did you get to see them before they had kind of a record out in that new era, or did the two things kind of coincide?
Yeah, they coincided. What happened was, I saw Rick Denko came to town on a solo tour, and I ended up interviewing him for that. And when I was talking to him about this tour, he revealed that they were in studio and completing some things for what would become the comeback album Jericho. And so we just stayed in contact. And as they geared up for their tour, they played the New Orleans Jazz and Heritage Festival. They made a couple other Louisiana stops. They played at the old Louisiana Hayride building in Shreveport, where Elvis got his start, Shreveport, Louisiana. I got to see them a lot over a very intense, like maybe 5-year period of time, both solo and together. And it was really a magical period. Rick had a trio record out at the same time. Robbie Robertson came back with another album, Storyville, in that same little window. Got a chance to interview him and to follow along with his parallel track. And all of a sudden, you know, they're getting inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. It just, the Band was back. It's difficult to describe how exciting the early 90s were for a band that had been dormant for so long. Everything kind of came together for them. And it had been a long road. Richard Manuel, one of their original three singers, died by suicide in 1986, in the mid-80s. And it was a long road back for them, the trio that remained in the Band. Garth Hudson, Rick Danko, and Levon Helm. But they weren't done with tragedies, you know. They got that trio of records out, but not before Levon Helm's health began to fail. He managed to fight off cancer for a good long while, but then Rick Danko suddenly passed away in the late 90s. And so just as quickly as it seemed like the band had resurrected itself out of nowhere, they were no more. A few years after that, of course, we lost Levon as well. And now Garth Hudson, following Robbie Roberts' death last year. So Hudson becomes the last man standing. And he was still performing, doing house concerts late last year. He was the oldest of the group. And I just think his health had begun to fail just from old age. You know, he was 87 years old. But thankful to have seen as many shows as I did when in the resurrected period. And I've gotten to talk to all those guys, you know, to have gotten a chance to really dig into it musically with them. And those insights, I'm very happy to share and to weave into the book that I'm working on, which will be called Forever Young and is due later in the spring.
I'm glad you talked about all that, because that's something else that you and I kind of talked about here in the past few days, is just, you know, kind of what I would call the second act of the band when they put out that trio of records. And I think that there's plenty of folks that kind of just feel like the band kind of ended with the last waltz, and anything that came after that couldn't possibly be worth hearing. And I go back to those three records a good amount, especially, I guess, probably Jericho. And they're just kind of a really special part, a special piece of their overall story. And I think that they deserve to be in the conversation just as much as some of their other material. Yes, their other material is, you know, legendary, classic, whatever you want to say, for a certain reason, but it's just like, they did some good things on those three records.
Well, they had a great band, you know, intuitive singers, a musical genius by their side, but you wondered about the material with Robbie Robertson gone. In particular, later in the 70s, was their lone songwriter, not just the principal songwriter, but the only songwriter. And none of the others could be called prolific, even in his absence. But they chose material well, and some of their newer collaborators wrote songs too. Those last three albums aren't going to move past music from Big Pink or the band. They're self-taught about them. But there are some shimmering moments, you know, and we got to hear Richard Manuel again. That alone was worth the price of admission for me.
Bringing it back to Garth specifically for you, what are kind of some key Garth Hudson moments in the band catalog or otherwise that you would, you know, point folks to?
Hudson became even more important to the structure of the band when they reunited. The voices, as always, led the way, but Hudson provided this sturdy musical foundation for it all. I would point people actually to a song from those comeback years. His accordion work on their cover of Bruce Springsteen's Atlantic City really propels everything.
What is kind of your go-to album as a fan that, like, you feel like represents Garth especially well?
I would say that it's an unusual choice, I'm sure, but I would point people to Northern Lights and Southern Cross. That's really an album that Garth dominates. Not only do you have his usual incredible performances on accordion, the Lowry, organ, saxophone, he had begun to master then new technology in the synthesizer, and it's a very interesting path that they did not follow, in which you take their music and give it a more modern sheen. There is a lot, in fact, of synthesizer work on it, and it really represents something that could have carried them if they had made another original album in that era into the next decade. There was a modernness to it that felt organic because of Garth. You know, he has such a wealth of musical knowledge, such a breadth of understanding of how these things should work. The synthesizers don't sound tacked on, and they don't sound cheap. He uses similar techniques to the ones that he uses with the organ in building these synthesizer tracks, but it's never over the top. It just adds another element to their music that is so surprising. I find the songwriting on that album to be actually outstanding. I think that it is their most underrated record and easily my number three most favorite. And the one I listen to the most, really, because it's one that I came to pretty early on. And more than that, it's just not, it's not played as much, you know. It still seems to have a lot of friction to it because you just don't hear those songs. I really feel like that Garth's saxophone playing on It Makes No Difference maybe some of maybe the most beautiful 30 seconds in their whole career. I'd like to add that as well, though.
That's a great addendum. Yeah, we can't. I totally agree 100%. And you know, the other thing that I've been thinking about the last few days here is just like, I appreciate that he was able to do things like the album that you and I have talked about. Garth Hudson presents a Canadian celebration of the band, where he got together with a lot of Canadian artists to kind of reinterpret songs that he had written or helped write in the band's catalog. In your remembrance at UCR, you mentioned the Love for Levon concert where he played. You know, there was the kind of initial Last Waltz tribute tour, I think, for the 40th anniversary in 2017, that like he was the special guest at those shows. Like, it just feels like that through a series of events and recordings like that, he kind of got a chance to know how much he was appreciated while he was still here.
Well, and it's you know, the interesting thing about Garth Hudson is, despite the way that I found him doing some sessions work, he didn't play on a lot of records. He didn't show up in a lot of places. I'm glad that he got his roses, for sure. He played some solo dates with a big band, like an 11-piece band, in the 2000s and into the 2010s, did some very well received shows. You know, he could play anything, and in your mind you could picture him playing with anyone and everyone. But he was an unconventional person, very nocturnal, prone to deep examinations and even deeper conversations. You know, his playing reflected that knowledge, but also that eccentricity. You know, it may have been hard for other acts to figure out how to use him. You know, Robbie Robertson seemed to instinctively understand when to turn to Garth Hudson and say, what should we do next? Whereas others may have thought, well, I'm not sure how I can fit that into my songwriting so easily. You know, that said, though, the moments when he did step out, you mentioned the Roger Waters concert at the Wall. I'm thinking of Van Morrison's Wavelength album, the Planet Waves album with Bob Dylan. It could be simply remarkable. If there's one thing I could say that I wish for with his career, it would have been to have heard him sit in with more people. You know, you can kind of imagine what he would have done with the original concept that Tom Petty had for Southern Accents. But you know, these are selfish wishes.
Well, that's probably a good place to wrap things up. I do want to say that you've mentioned the book that you have on the way, Forever Young, How the Band and Bob Dylan Made the Only 60s Music That Still Matters. And as you know, I'm quite excited to read this thing, and you've been sharing some samples on your Substack. I know it's always a process to put something like this together. Like, how would you describe the journey that you have taken in writing this upcoming book?
Well, the thing that I wanted to do with it was, rather than writing a timeline book where you sort of start at the beginning and end at the end, I wanted to tell their story through the prism of their songs. So it's very musically focused. We're not going to get into their private lives. We're going to talk about the way that their history was lived through music, and a little more interpretive rather than, you know, being so hung up on historical fact. A lot of the conversations that I had with Garth and with Robbie Robertson were about that. Were about why they selected certain instruments, as we mentioned earlier, but you know, also just how the songwriting process, how things were put together. And so that'll really be the focus of the of this rather than another historical retelling, which I think at this point, if you have interest in Bob Dylan and the band, you probably know the story pretty well.
Well, Nick, thank you so much, man, for taking time to do this. It was a lot of fun, man.
Thanks for having me on.
All right, we will wrap things up here. But to the folks listening here, do yourself a favor. Put on some music from the band or any of the things from Garth that we've talked about here today. You're going to take a really fun ride. Maybe you've taken that ride before, so you already know. But if this is the first time that you're taking that ride, buckle up and thank you for joining us here. There you have it. Another episode of the UCR Podcast is in the books. I am Matt Wardlaw. Thank you so much to all of you for listening. Please make sure to follow this podcast if you haven't, so you will get future episodes as they're released. And we'd appreciate it also if you would rate and review the podcast wherever you're listening. Look, we are all music fans, so if you enjoyed this, you can find a lot more at ultimateclassicrock.com, and we'll see you there.